This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 18th of April 2014. Though we are actually recording this issue on Thursday the 17th of April, tomorrow Friday of course being Good Friday, in the hope that you will still receive your this by Saturday. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 17th of April 2014, which this week has been edited by Ken Clemenson and Irene Dowding. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Bus Firms on Collision Course Over City Routes, Flood Bags to be Removed from Village, and Fire Service Needs to Find £12 million in Savings. So we'll start off with the story behind the first headline.
Bus firms on collision course over city routes. Bus companies are on collision course with developers of the £130 million Silver Hill scheme in Winchester. Stagecoach's local director wants buses to continue using the High Street, Middlebrook Street and St George's Street. But developer Henderson and the City Council are adamant that removing them is vital to encourage people from the High Street into the new development of shops, offices and homes, and to allow the street market to move down to the Broadway. The current bus station will be replaced by stops along Friarsgate and the Broadway. Andrew Dyer, Managing Director of Stagecoach South, said he would seriously consider resisting a traffic order that would close the roads to buses, thus forcing a public inquiry. Mr. Dyer said, "We believe the current route is essential to maintain. The stops by M&S are probably the busiest in Winchester, at the retail heart of the city. Passengers want to be as close to the heart of the city as they can possibly get. Bus access should be maintained for the convenience of customers." Mr. Dyer added, "We are very much in favour of Silver Hill. We hope for further discussion with all parties to resolve this." But on Wednesday, Martin Perry, Director of Development at the TH Real Estate, the part of Henderson handling Silver Hill, said he was baffled by Mr. Dyer's stance, as the Board of Stagecoach last week signed an agreement that confirms the removal of buses. Mr. Perry said, "The new routing has been agreed at board level. There is no provision for them to formally object to any traffic orders. The road closures have already been confirmed as part of the compulsory purchase." And he added, "I don't know what he, Mr. Dyer, is talking about. It is shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted. The City Council is adamant that they are not going to have buses passing through the centre of town anymore. We do not want the retail areas to be separated. Putting buses through would be a recipe for disaster. Middlebrook Street could be closed to buses with the shift to Friarsgate stops within 6 months of construction starting," said Mr. Perry. "Work is due to start either late this year or early in 2015. Council leader Keith Wood said of Mr. Dyer's stance, "It would be a great pity if they insisted on doing this. It would affect people walking through Winchester and increase pollution. It would be a retrograde step." Mr. Dyer said he believed other bus operators, Velvet and Blue Star, took a similar view, but the Chronicle was unable to contact them for comment before going to press. City Councillor Ian Tate, whose ward includes the High Street, said, "Shared space with buses is not safe. I think they go too fast, and Stagecoach has chosen not to have a bus station, and it is late in the day for them to drag their heels in." But Patrick Davis, senior member of the City of Winchester Trust, but speaking in a private capacity, said he was concerned about shifting most buses to Friars Gate. It would be a deterrent for people using buses if it was not at a convenient spot. It is going to be difficult for people with shopping, pushchairs, or the disabled, he said. Mr. Perry added, a recent change to the scheme would see new bus stops on the Broadway serving the east of the city, thus removing the need for a contraflow on the one-way Friars Gate.
The second headline story is flood bags to be removed from village. Giant bags used in Easton to deliberately flood countryside to protect Winchester are due to be removed this week. In January, the Environment Agency placed hundreds of bags full of gravel in the river near the M3. The aim was to flood the nearby fields, spreading the water to minimise water levels in Winchester. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, City Council member for the Itchen Valley ward, said, "The plan is to remove the large boulders by crane and some of the bags of gravel. The gravel will be allowed to flow down the river in the locations where the channel is over deep and will not cause a restriction in the future. The empty bags will be removed altogether. They are not planning to do this all at one time and will start by splitting a few of the bags to monitor the effect. Then the remaining bags will be split over the next few weeks. The timing of the works will depend on safe access being possible and avoiding detrimental effects to angling interests."
Fire Service needs to find £12 million in savings. Unions have claimed that the county's fire service will be under threat after plans to find millions of pounds in savings were revealed this week. It came after fire chiefs launched a review in a bid to plug a £12 million budget black hole. Firefighters' jobs, fire stations and equipment, including fire engines, are all in the sights of a radical root and branch review, which will herald some of the biggest round of cuts Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service has ever faced. Downsizing fire trucks is among options currently being explored. Union leaders have warned that public and crew safety could be put at risk by cuts. Hampshire Fire Authority boss, Councillor Royston Smith, has vowed no station will close and frontline service quality would be maintained. But when asked whether jobs would be lost, he did not deny it. He said, "To close the gap, we will look at the options which will make sure that Hampshire communities are as safe as they are now, and if not, safer, for the best possible value." The review comes as the government aims to slash its grant by £9.9 million by 2017, which has opened up a huge hole of £12 million in the budget. More than £7 million can be saved by a range of measures already underway, including merging back-office functions with Hampshire Police and the County Council. But with £5 million of savings still needed, bosses are considering making huge savings from its fire service operations. Dave Curry, Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service's Director of Service Delivery, said, "The aim of this review will be to focus our resources in the area of greatest risk and deliver the best value services to the public. This review will encompass all aspects of the service's work, from the response we provide to incidents to our work in improving people's safety in their homes, workplaces and communities. While this review is only just underway, it is likely to lead to changes in the way we deliver our services in the future, and so our staff and our communities will be fully consulted over any proposals. Staff affected by the review will be consulted in the coming months, while a public consultation exercise will be carried out in the autumn with the cuts made next year." Peter Bates of Hampshire Fire Brigade Union, which represents around 700 uniformed staff in the county, said, "We are concerned about austerity measures that are being imposed nationally. These have reached Hampshire on a local level. We will be looking at this from multiple angles. One is the safety of the public and our members' jobs and safety, which could be compromised by crew cuts. We have made efficiency savings already, and fire stations, more often or not, running on minimal levels of crew, and we would be concerned if those levels reduced any lower.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with death announcements, which will then be followed by Christian comment. Bourne, Michael Bourne, at home on the 10th of April, aged 79. Hadfield, Ian Hadfield, at home on the 3rd of April, aged 92. Hall, Reg Hall, on the 8th of April. Hogan, Mary Patricia Hogan, known as Pat, on the 9th of April, aged 94. Parsons, Audrey Elsie Parsons, on the 5th of April, aged 87. Reader, Ray Reader, on the 6th of April, aged 66. Stanway, Jean Stanway, on the 10th of April, aged 92. Wills, Joe Wills, at home on the 6th of April, aged 81. And Wilson, Kathleen Wilson, known as Kate, on the 8th of April at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 87.
Christian comment this week is written by Terry E. Hemming, and he titles it, "There is great value in what cannot be measured." As I prepare for Easter Sunday, I am wondering who will be in the congregation. Easter is the great feast of the church, and in the past was when, if you wished to be considered a member of the church, you had to take communion. It is still important, though in England many who came at Christmas may not be with us on Easter Sunday. I'm not sure what caused that change. Perhaps with the downplaying of Lent after the Reformation, there was a loss of significance because there was no waiting before Easter arrived. Or perhaps the Victorian celebration of Christmas was never echoed in the celebration of Easter. Today, there's another problem. We are all so busy. There is much to do, so much of the world to see that we cannot possibly find the hour for a service on Sunday, or the hour and a half in Winchester Cathedral for the vigil on Saturday evening. Why waste time in church when there are so many other things calling for our attention? Many will say it is much better to go and visit someone or to look after the garden than to spend time in church. In the Book of Common Prayer, Holy Week starts on Monday with the story of a woman who came and poured out some expensive ointment or perfume on Jesus as he was preparing for what he knew were his last days before his death. The people were shocked and very sensibly commented that this was a waste of money, that if it had been sold, then it could have been more profitably used to help the poor. Jesus did not agree, and rightly said she would be remembered for this one act. Her ascribing worth to Jesus was not a waste. There is a danger for us to be equally utilitarian and to think that time not spent in doing is wasted. We might justify ourselves by saying we are helping others, or that we can give God worth by being in the country, on the beach, or in the garden. We might think, what a waste to spend it in church. However, just as the woman who poured her expensive perfume on Jesus did not waste it, but pointed to the significance of his death, so our giving of our time to show the worth of Jesus is not wasted either. Do not make the mistake of those who criticized the woman and who thought that only that which was useful was important. There is great value in that which cannot be measured, or which is not merely physical.
We now move on to the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836. You can email to letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got quite a variety of letters this week, I think 12 in total, so we'll start off with the first one.
And this first one is from Dr. Jeff Greenleaf, who says that Silver Hill is a folly worse than Brooks. Sir, the recent Silver Hill exhibition left me saddened and depressed. Winchester is a special place. Its buildings are quirky and have character. It has grown like this over centuries through small or contained development to create a city which attracts a large number of tourists, both from across the UK and the world. The new scheme will destroy this at a stroke. The proposed design is ghastly and completely out of character and size with its setting. It is a set of huge monolithic structures of homogeneous design. Other cities with cathedrals or minsters, for example Chester, York, Salisbury, have strict local laws to protect them from dominant development close by. Silver Hill will severely impose upon the setting of Winchester Cathedral. It is not appropriate to place massive slabs of almost identical buildings together into the city centre. Some cosmetic design has been attempted to present a varied facade, but this is only superficial and insufficient. The new streets will be narrow and dark, sandwiched between tall buildings and unbelievably depressing to walk along. The development lacks open spaces with light and character. Winchester has good weather, and sunlit squares and pavements are popular. In Silver Hill, these have been sacrificed to pack in as many retail units and homes as possible. This area has waterways traversing it. An opportunity has been missed to develop these into attractive features with paths and open seating areas. Silver Hill is the logical place for a central bus station, close to the city centre, and its omission is a mistake. The alternative is that buses will park around the city, being both untidy, pushes the problem elsewhere, and inconvenient to passengers. Most residents consider the Brooks development a planning disaster and a bad mistake. Silver Hill, being 10 times larger, will compound this error tenfold. It is a misplaced design, more suited for a large metropolis, and it is time for a total rethink. So writes Dr. Jeff Greenleaf, The Woodlands, Kingsworthy.
And a second letter on the same subject. This is by P.V. Ward. No consideration for passengers, sir. There is another potential inconvenience from the decision to replace the new bus station with a line of stops in Friarsgate. That is that these stops will serve only those routes leaving the city centre by travelling along St George's Street and Jury Street. The contraflow plan has been dropped. A study of the plan shows bus stops retained in the Broadway. I take it that these are for routes across City Bridge, including buses to Alton, Winnell, Highcliffe, St Catherine's and Barfield. Thus, passengers alighting at a stop in Friarsgate and wishing to change to an eastbound bus will have to walk right through the new development to catch it. A new bus station would allow a much easier interchange. That's by P.V. Ward, Nelson Road, Highcliffe, Winchester.
Phil Yates says, I'm with the professor on this one. Sir, re the recently demolished Roman wall in Southgate Street, I must say I agree with Professor Martin Biddle. So long as the site was excavated and, more importantly, fully recorded, This small section of wall was not worth preserving. More substantial buildings have been demolished in Winchester, the Brookes area being typical. At least, local historians have the satisfaction of knowing that a medieval ditch is being kept. I also agree with Colin Cook. The planners should be more aware of sites known to be steeped in the history of our city. And there are not many that are not. Winchester should take a leaf out of the Book of York, where the city gates, they call them bars, are all still intact. One can also walk the ancient wall, and there are many Tudor buildings. A walk down the shambles is bliss, and you can feel yourself going back in time. So, county and city councillors and planners, take note. And if you don't believe me, go to Yorkshire and the stunning city of York. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
This next letter by Andy Smith does not entirely agree with part of that letter. And he says that the city should hang its head in shame. Sir, I followed with mounting dismay the destruction of the Roman wall in Southgate Street. Winchester should hang its head in shame. I don't blame the developers, who could and arguably should have been more sensitive. They exist to make a profit. But I have nothing but contempt for the Philistines at the City Council, who allowed 2,000 years of history to be erased in minutes. At least their successors won't have to make these sorts of decisions. I'll be surprised if the walls of the new development are still standing in 100 years. That's from Andy Smith, Tegdown Meads, Winchester.
And the next letter is written by John Gibson, and it's headed, Ping Pong Has No End After 24 Years. And it is not about ping pong. So, your front page story of March 27th, headed, Developer Set to Fight New Town Refusal. I'm amused that it has taken 24 years of ping pong between developers and Winchester City Council to agree, or otherwise, to create a new town with still no conclusion. On the one hand, those living in Mitchellover are only there by the fact that they were the new town. And prior to that, I remember when all this was fields, woodland was the state of affairs. So though hypocrisy may be too strong, residents might be deemed nimbyistic. Revisiting the article I read, we appreciate the sensitivity of this matter and we have no immediate plans to take forward any development proposal at Mitchellover Station. Has no lesson been learned from Aesop's fable of the woodcutter and the tree? The tree made the error, giving a branch of himself unconditionally. Then the woodsman made short work of chopping down the forest using his hitherto useless axe. It seems Zurich want an open-ended deal where they can import development plans later. For we have no immediate plans, read, you didn't say we couldn't do future development. To that end, all this activity makes no sense. Can it be agreed this far and no further at any time? Both parties would then know the future regarding facilities, size of development, etc. is assured. Any approach to other than small extensions on existing property would be futile. This is the logical way to solve once and for all a debacle waiting to happen. Upgrading derelict, uninhabited existing properties could help reduce housing shortages. But that's another story. That's written by John Gibson of Lynchclose, Winchester.
Roy Faithful heads his letter, dragging feet over a disastrous plan. Sir, I totally agree with Jeff Bruty's and Tony Mundy's excellent letters in the Chronicle of April the 11th. Clearly, Keller Homes is not willing to resubmit plans for Barton Farm, leaving out Andover Road rerouting, because it will cost them time as well as money. The latter is what they are in the real business of making, not the idealised artistic impression idyll that is put forward to attempt to mollify the gullible. I find it incomprehensible that elected councillors are dragging their feet in the face of great public unhappiness about a disastrous plan that residents and motorists will be landed with for the foreseeable future. What's that? Oh, yes, the councillors don't necessarily live in the actual area, do they? Reversed NIMBYism, then. Roy Faithful, Hairstock, Winchester.
Andrew Allen says that he's losing his faith in council credibility. Sir, we have been reassured by Councillor Roy Humby that no decision has yet been made on the plan to build 50 extra care flats on Chesil Street open car park. Yet, we woke on Monday to find the car park closed and an excavation team test drilling into its surface. No notification was given other than an advisory closure board at the entrance at the end of last week. This further event proves to me that the council is hell-bent on pressing through this scheme, in spite of the concerns expressed through the recent and hastily arranged public consultation. Even though only 4 days' notice was given, it was well attended and confirmed the view that Chesil Street was not the best place for an elderly care home because of the restricted narrow pavement and that closure of the park would have an adverse effect on the commercial life of the city. I am beginning to lose any faith or credibility in the City Council to listen to views, and am concerned that by pressing on regardless, an overpowering development in one of the most historic streets will remove views of the wooded St Giles Hill on the main approach to what was a lovely old city. I only hope those councillors involved will consider what they are doing and scrutinise the plans set before them by the officers. So writes Andrew Allen, Chesil Street, Winchester.
Chris Gillam writes, bringing back new age of vandalism. Sir, in a Conservative Party flyer recently delivered, our MP, Steve Bright, welcomes the government's undertaking to improve the A303 along its length. Terrible news to anyone who values the wonderful landscapes this country is heir to. When road builders carried out the pincer movement on our city's great landscape, bringing the M3 to Twyford Down from both sides, their idea was to give no choice but to join up the two bits, no matter how precious the area in between. So Winchester's historic origins were wiped out. The Iron Age settlement was ripped up and the splendid salient of the South Downs bulldozed across the Itchen Valley. This monumental piece of Philistinism was so hotly contested that when it appeared to have initiated a profound change in policy and spelled out the end of Mrs. Thatcher's mad rose to prosperity. Now, George Osborne is determined to bring back a new age of vandalism. Despite the narrowing window in which to tackle global warming and a dangerously increasing dependency on oil, Osborne plans to feed all the old foolish habits with the new road-building bonanza. An A303 plan tops everything, threatening the integrity of the most iconic prehistoric site in Europe, Stonehenge. The government called its setting a national disgrace and proposed tunnelling of the A303 past the monument. That idea was abandoned, not because of the huge damage to the World Heritage Site, but because of its £500 million cost. There has never been any intention to tunnel the WHS in its entirety. So now they're seeking a Twyford Down solution. Increase the capacity of the A303, generate more traffic, and make Stonehenge look like an insurmountable barrier, requiring the imposition of a superhighway across the World Heritage Site. It's a great pity our MP supports such a monstrous intention. And that was written by Chris Gillam of Upper High Street, Winchester.
Sarah Robinson says the lasting solution for the A33 junction. Sir, I was not surprised Mrs. Rutter complained in your pages about the lack of publicity about her involvement in the Cart and Horses Junction. She is, after all, up for election in May. However, I wonder if anyone else has noticed that what she recommends is actually, virtually, the same as this there now. I refer to a Lib Dem leaflet. To exit the B3047 onto the A33, will there be one lane, or will we have to cross white lines to clear the, quote, parked cars waiting to turn into Kingsworthy? Stationary vehicles, especially large vans and 4x4s in the middle of any road, are good at obscuring sight lines, and having to wait to turn right means drivers crane their necks to see the traffic on the A33 from Basingstoke. Until the traffic on the A33 is required to stop, or at least prepare to stop at a roundabout, safety will not be improved. It might be more expensive, but is it beyond the wit of man to put up signs saying, roundabout ahead, and to paint a white circle on the road? A more important and durable solution can be done when funds are available. Mrs. Sarah Robinson, Old Station Road, Itchen Abbas.
Highway strategy just not working, writes Brian Lambert. Sir, I've just read an article in the Hampshire County Council Now magazine about the council's strategy for keeping the county moving. Does it not concern our councillors and the highways department that it isn't working? In our lane is a pothole exactly the neat rectangle created when the council made a permanent repair a while ago. It is several inches deep, so you can see how the road was built. A base layer of large stones was bound together by tarmac, with a thinner coating forming the wearing layer. The repair was done by filling with small aggregate tarmac to just below the road surface, but no attempt was made to seal the edges with liquid tarmac, so water collected patch and restarted the process of deteriorating. Even more worrying is that Petersfield Road, Ropley, was resurfaced and then had to have a major repair a few years later, and now it's disintegrating. There is also a groove where two passes of the tarmac laying machine met. You'd think those responsible would change the method of repair and stop putting out PR material that anyone who drives or cycles knows bears no relationship to reality. Brian Lambert, Parkstone Road, Ropley.
Well, the next letter is written by Brian Orange, and it's not about roads. It's headed, New Hospital, Not Such a Good Idea. Sir, a new hospital between Winchester and Basingstoke, is this a good idea? Now, I ask because one difficulty is the distance between Andover, Basingstoke and Winchester. It is not a good geographical fit. If you live in any of these areas, you do not frequent the other two, unless you have to. These decisions are made by people who do not put the patient first. How would patients get to this new hospital? The answer is, with great difficulty, unless by car. In Romsey Road, Winchester, I see many people use the buses because the Royal Hampshire County Hospital is serviced so frequently, which would not be the case at the new hospital. Before being closed over a year ago, Royal Hampshire County Hospital outpatients was easy to access, as it was close as you could get to Romsey Road. Perfect for outpatients and excellent for dropping off such patients. Burrell Wing outpatients is excellent for doctors and nurses, but not for patients. The entrance is a floor below, so all outpatients must walk and use steps or lift. It is a nightmare for drivers to find an easy way to drop off or collect after their appointments. The Royal Hampshire County Hospital has many good points, but are these new plans for a new hospital really what we patients want? We want local hospitals, not one 10 miles out of town. In business, the customer is always right. In hospital trusts, patients do not apparently know best and come low down the list. Am I the only person, patient, with misgivings about the location of a new hospital? And that's from Brian Orange of Frorham's House, King's Somborne.
Dennis Archdeacon says, business as usual for the Lib Dems? Sir, simply lovely to hear from our Liberal Democrat councillors in St Bartholomew's Ward, Winchester. No change in their views on the North Walls Recreation Centre. Let's go ahead and build on the cricket pitch. Forget, in fact, don't even mention the effect on King Alfred's memorial in Hyde Abbey Garden. Forget the recent flooding of the surrounding floodplain. The clue's in the name. All done and dusted. Thanks. Dennis Archdeacon, Saxon Road, Winchester.
Quite a variety of letters. Anyway. Sorry, there's a further letter.
No, there isn't.
Sorry about that little glitch. We're now moving on to the items of historical interest, and we have them from 200 years ago, 100, 50 and 25.
And this first or two first pieces from 200 years ago, April 18th, 1814. They both come under the same headline, which is City Celebrates Bonaparte's Fall. Yesterday evening, our city was brilliantly illuminated in consequence of the late glorious news. Every house displayed a profusion of lights, intermixed with branches of laurel, wreaths of flowers, etc. The white cockade was exhibited in almost every window, and was also very generally worn by the inhabitants. The view of the Buttercross from the west gate had a most pleasant effect. And the second piece. A London paper says that the following facts may be relied upon and form a curious part of the history of Bonaparte since his fall. In his last attempt to get between the armies of the Allies, he took Baron Weissenburg prisoner, whom he carried to Fontainebleau, and who was present at his abdication. The Baron complimented him on his fortitude under such a reverse of fortune, in answer to which he said it was wise to submit patiently to the course of events, but that he had committed one great error. I married an Austrian princess when I ought to have married a Russian one.
100 years ago was April the 18th, 1914, and it's headed Child Rescued from Drowning. A plucky rescue from drowning was effected in the weirs on Good Friday evening by Mr. D.H. Hunt of Osborne House, New Road, Southampton. This gentleman was walking beside the stream when his notice was called to a small boy who had fallen into the water from one of the bridges. It is stated that the little fellow had already disappeared twice and was going down for the third time when Mr. Hunt went in after him at considerable risk to himself and brought him to a place of safety. The danger to little children of playing on bridges across the weirs is very considerable.
50 years ago, April the 18th, 1964, Green Jackets return to city. The next few weeks see the return to Winchester's precincts of the Green Jackets Brigade Training Depot, which has been weathering it out at Bushfield during the reconstruction of the upper barracks in Romsey Road. To be renamed Peninsula Barracks, the new quarters will without doubt be an army showpiece and as crisply efficient as the turnout which has made the Green Jackets Brigade the crack unit it is. The huge blocks have been thoroughly modernised and now stand beside smart new buildings, worthy successors to the palace, designed by Christopher Wren, which would have been the palace of Charles II.
Now this piece from 25 years ago, April the 21st, 1989, has as its headline, Barracks Plan an Insult to Locals. Development proposals for Winchester's Peninsula Barracks site were this week slammed as an insult to local people. Labour City Councillor Mr Patrick Davies argues that the Lower Barracks is set to become an exclusive ghetto and says he is concerned for the future of the whole of the barracks area. Now local councillors are planning to call for part of the site to be given over to a housing association for low-cost housing. Arundel Housing Securities, the developers of the site, are understood to have been approached by at least two housing associations.
That concludes the historical items. Always fun, I think. And next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which will be followed then by Letter from Westminster and finally First Person.
Yes, the editorial comment is headed Pedestrianised Areas Safer, More Attractive. The Chronicle has this week revealed a rift over a key feature of the Silver Hill scheme in Winchester. Stagecoach wants to retain the bus route that sees vehicles stopping at M&S in the heart of the city. Local bus director Andrew Dyer says his view is supported by other operators, Velvet and Blue Star. But Martin Perry, Director of Development at TH Real Estate, says the raising of such concerns is too late, as agreements have been signed between the developers and Stagecoach head office confirming the traffic order. Mr Dyer's position is understandable, as he wishes to be as close to the city centre as possible, even though Friarsgate is only 100 to 200 yards away. Removing the buses has been a key feature of Silver Hill for some 20 years. Retaining buses on the High Street, Middlebrook Street, St George's Street axis would scupper any hope of moving the street market from the narrow High Street to the Broadway. It's important that the stalls are moved because the congestion they cause is still aggravating too many people and shopkeepers. More importantly, a virtual doubling of the pedestrianised area will make the city an even more attractive place.
Westminster Diary this week is written by George Hollingbury, the MP for the Meon Valley. A very uncertain and perhaps frightening future faces everyone if the people of Scotland vote to become an independent nation this autumn. Goodbye, Scotland, and good luck. Sounds so simple. But a yes north of the border opens up a political, economic and constitutional can of worms not seen in these islands since the Civil War of the 1640s. Now, I'm sure it's not going to end up in warfare, but there is presently absolutely no process to cut the 370-year-old apron strings of union and send Scotland on its way. In fact, I can see years of wrangling and bad feeling coming, if it happens. From whether the good residents of Glasgow get to watch EastEnders on the BBC, to the money in all our pockets. In the first few days, Scotland and the rest of the United Kingdom might actually have to hold its breath because Parliament, and here I mean Westminster, does not actually have to allow the separation to occur. My view is that it would be incredibly foolish of Westminster politicians to try and stand in the way, but if the vote were in any way equivocal, say 52% in favour and 48% against, it might be tempting for Labour to come up with an alternative like Devo Max, which sees Scotland running everything apart from defence and foreign affairs. There are 59 Westminster seats in Scotland, and 58 of them aren't Conservative. That means that the Tories would need to win 58 fewer seats to secure a majority at Westminster. Seems like quite a motive to me for Labour to swing into action. What about the 2015 general election? Negotiations on separation surely won't be complete by then, so do the Scots get to vote for Westminster MPs, even though they've voted not to have anything to do with Westminster? And if they do, as we now have fixed parliamentary terms of 5 years, do we have to wait that long for the Scottish MPs to go, or do they automatically lose their seats, get told to leave the marital home and take a train to the border once the divorce papers have been signed? That's just a few examples of the complications thrown up, and it could become quite a mess. We haven't even begun to consider the challenges of dividing assets and liabilities, immigration control, currency, and so on. If the Scots vote to go, we're unlikely to be able to do much other than deal with the consequences of separation. And it will be costly in many ways, not least making foreigners out of family and friends. And on that basis alone, without even considering the merits of the case for remaining together or not, I hope Scotland votes to stay.
First person this week is written by Ronald Allison, who says that he is irritated at the intrusion but deplored by the waste. I'm not sure how many telephone cold callers are regular readers of the Hampshire Chronicle. Probably not many, possibly none at all. But if by any chance you are in the business or know of anyone who has ever been involved in it, please feel free to pass on any or all of the following information. I have not recently been in a serious accident, nor do I wish to have solar heating or cavity wall insulation installed in my house. I have not previously indicated that I wanted double glazing. And though I would, of course, be happy to receive several thousands of pounds that may be due to me, I've never purchased PPI, and therefore it has never been missold to me. Nor do I enjoy receiving any sort of pre-recorded important message, particularly if it is sent during a meal or a major televised sporting event. And while I'm at it, is it really necessary for various estate agents to inform me by a glossy card, usually, that they would be happy to let or sell my house? I rather thought that was why they were in business in the first place, and that it would be up to me, if I needed such a service, to let them know. I could go on and mention the amount of mail that comes through our letterboxes each day, destined, almost without a second look, for the recycling bin. But enough is enough. If you have been wondering, you will no doubt have worked out what set me on this chain of thought. Three cold calls one recent evening started me off and then took me beyond irritation at the intrusion to thinking about waste. And how a good many of us are at wasting, or at least how good I am. Time is a fine example, along with its close friend procrastination. I'm well able to do nothing without the least feeling of guilt, and leaving certain matters until the last minute is no problem either. Take this very column. It has been in my mind for some days, but it is only now, on the morning of its due date, that I am at the computer. Why bother? You may well ask, and fair enough, but my serious concern is of the food and other goods we buy, but don't eat or otherwise use. We live, we are told, in a disposable society when it's often impossible to get something repaired, or if it is possible, it's far cheaper to buy a replacement. And this when millions around the world are starving and thousands here in Britain are using food banks. Surely it is a waste of time to be irritated by trivia and wrong to do nothing about waste itself.
We now move on to the week's announcements and what's on and lighting up times. First of all, a message from the people who present the magazine, which some of you may have received within the past few weeks. I've been asked to say, could you say that there was a mistake in the presenter's introduction and that the edition of the magazine that you have just received is for April 2014 and not April 2004 as announced? A date for your diary. You're all invited to the Winchester Talking Newspaper 2014 AGM, which will be held on Tuesday the 6th of May at 2 p.m. at Littleton Memorial Hall. And there will be a talk by Malcolm Wells, who is a national speaker for Canine Partners, and that will be followed by afternoon tea. So we all hope that you will be able to join us at Littleton Memorial Hall on Tuesday the 6th of May at 2 p.m. A few items of what's coming. Not this coming weekend, the following weekend. That's the weekend of April the 26th, 27th. On Saturday, April the 26th, the Band of the Bugles, the Band and Bugles of the Rifles Regiment will be giving a concert in Winchester Cathedral at 7 p.m. If you're interested in that, the Cathedral box office is 01962 857275. That's 01962 857275. A competing event on the same day, a spring festival at Rumsey Abbey at 7 p.m. with the Rumsey Youth Concert Band and selection of classic and modern wind band music. And tickets are available from following telephone, or more information from the following telephone number, which is 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. And then on the following day, Sunday the 27th of April, there was a St George's Day concert at the Thorndon Hall, Winchester Road, Chandler's Ford, and information and tickets for that one, phone 023 8048 5051. That's 023 8048 5051. And at the Theatre Royal in Winchester, from May the 5th, Monday, May the 5th to Saturday the 10th of May, there is a performance of HMS Pinafore, and it says a sparkling all-male production. From Wednesday the 21st of May to Thursday the 22nd of May, there's something called the Energy Show, presented by Science Museum Live, an explosive family theatre for age 7 and above. And then Shakespeare's As You Like It will be presented by Shakespeare at the Tobacco Factory from Tuesday the 3rd to Saturday the 7th of June. More information about what's going on and booking tickets, you can contact the Theatre Royal box office on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 442. Lighting up times. Today, Thursday the 17th of April, the sun rose just before 10 past 6 in the morning and will set at 5 past 8 in the evening. Wednesday of next week, the 23rd, sunrise will be at 5 to 6 in the morning and sunset will be at 4 past 8 in the evening. Just a reminder that if you know of somebody who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. There is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. We now move on to items of general news interest.
Yes, the first item is concerning the recent floods, and it's headed Firefighters Draw Up Flood Lessons, Protecting Against Future Chaos. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service is leading the charge to protect the county against future flooding. County Councillor Boss Roy Perry said there were lessons to be learned in the wake of the winter weather that caused destruction and chaos across Hampshire, leaving a £68 million bill for repairs to roads and infrastructure. The fire service is drawing up those lessons by organising a multi-agency debrief, pulling together recommendations for future plans from councils, emergency services and the Environment Agency. As reported by the Hampshire Chronicle, it comes as fire chiefs have launched a review to try to plug a £12 million gap in the budget, leaving firefighter jobs, fire stations and equipment, including fire engines, at risk. Council officials will also meet with utility companies in the coming months to work more closely on protecting residents from floods. Speaking at a cabinet meeting on the impact of the flooding, Councillor Perry said, "There are definitely lessons to be learned. There is no doubt about that, and Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service will be drawing up those lessons." The rising waters caused residents in Romsey to leave their homes, closed roads across the county, and closed St Bede School in Winchester, which was partially submerged. Councillors praised steps taken more than a decade ago at St Bede's following previous floods that stopped the school being completely submerged this time. Hampshire Education boss Councillor Peter Edgar said, "We were advised by the Environment Agency in 2001 to spend £2 million on the school, and the fact that we took that advice stopped the school being completely submerged in the flood. What we were told at the time was that the money was to prevent a 1-in-1,000-year contingency, which didn't quite work out." Councillor Perry also thanked all those involved in protecting lives during the floods. He said, "I want to thank everyone who had a part to play, not least individual householders who helped neighbours. I think we saw the quality of the community in Hampshire at its very best."
Experts begin analysis of ancient royal bones. DNA analysis of the oldest royal bones in England has begun at Winchester Cathedral, the Hampshire Chronicle has learned. Experts could finally be on the cusp of resolving an internationally significant mystery that has perplexed historians for centuries. Six mortuary chests, which have been sitting on top of some stone presbytery screens around the choir for over 350 years, are thought to contain the bones of seven Anglo-Saxon kings and one Norman monarch. Experts believe those interred include King Canute, King of England, Denmark and Norway, his Queen Emma of Normandy, as well as their son Harthen Canute. Canute, who died in Shaftesbury in November 1035, was originally buried in Winchester's Old Minster, before work on the city's cathedral had ever begun. 2 years ago, the chests were moved from the choir to the Lady Chapel at the building's east end, so work could begin without removing them from consecrated ground. This is now closed off to visitors, with the mortuary chests lined up under strong lighting behind the screen. An official cathedral guide told her group of tourists while approaching the Lady Chapel on Tuesday, "What's happening here is very exciting. We've begun work here to look at the DNA of some of our oldest kings." Winchester Cathedral has until now insisted that the conservation work only related to the chests in which the bones were interred. When asked about what is being said on their official tours, a cathedral spokesman said, "I didn't realise that that information was already out there." Rumours continue to circulate that a confidential deal has been signed with a television company to produce a documentary about the work, though these have again been vehemently denied. There would be huge national and international interest should DNA testing prove the veracity of the bones. 2 years ago, the cathedral received Heritage Lottery Fund support for a £10.5 million bid for repairs to the building's fabric and the development entitled Kings and Scribes, The Birth of a Nation. A grant of £475,000 was awarded to fund the work required to make a full application. It has been previously reported that celebrity archaeologist Professor Mark Horton would be working on the bones together with a team of scientists from Bristol University. He has close links with several television shows, including the long-running Channel 4 show Time Team. It is believed that the bones have previously been moved twice over the centuries, the first time by Bishop Henri de Blois in 1158, so that they could be reinterred. English Civil War Roundhead troops then stormed the cathedral in 1642, plundered the chests, and used the larger bones to smash the building's precious stained glass windows. When they were gathered up and returned to the mortuary chests in 1661, it was not known which bones went together, so they were simply placed in a jumbled form. The kings and queens thought to be interred in the caskets are King Cunigals, ruled 611 to 643, King Kenwall, 643 to 672, King Egbert, 802 to 839, King Ethelwulf, 839 to 856, King Edred, 946 to 955, King Edwig, 955 to 959, King Canute, who, contrary to popular belief, probably didn't vainly try to turn the tides, 1016 to 1035. His wife, Queen Emma of Normandy, and Norman monarch, King Rufus, who died in the New Forest in August the 2nd after being felled by an arrow.
Pothole busters mobilised. We've all heard of the Ghostbusters, but now there's a new team on the prowl in towns across Hampshire to tackle the pothole plague causing misery to thousands of motorists. Dubbed the Pothole Busters, they are being drafted in to carry out emergency repairs across more than 5,000 miles of roads in the county. A total of 80 gangs of workers, 60% more than normal, are being equipped to carry out the urgent work. They will be armed with specialist jet patcher machines to help mend damage caused to the roads after the heaviest rainfall in Hampshire in 250 years. Pothole buster signs are appearing on rural roads across the county as the emergency work gets underway. The move comes after Hampshire County Council was handed £11.5 million from the government to carry out repairs after weeks of rain and flooding earlier this year. Council bosses say that money will help, but the long-term cost will be far higher and could even reach £63 million, and they will continue to lobby the government for more funding.
Wives in Harmony for Military Choir. Military wives' choirs are well known for offering companionship and support to the partners of servicemen across the country. Now Winchester has its very own, which started in January and has seen almost 30 members already sign up. The practice room of the band and bugles of the Rifles at the Army Training Regiment on Andover Road may be tucked away on the corner of the campus, but that doesn't take away from the huge impact it so clearly has on the lives of military wives who go there. Dawn Devereux, a civilian instructor at the Royal Air Force, who originally joined a military wives' choir in Aldershot, is responsible for the birth of this new group, and said that she started it after applying for a job on the site. "When I said that I was in the choir, they said that they were trying to start one here, and would I help them?" she said. "Being in a military wives' choir is all about the fun of it. It's about being together and having that companionship. Most of us have been through lots of things because we've all been married to service personnel, so it's knowing what it's like being part and being able to come somewhere for a couple of hours a week to forget it all. You know that there are people that have experienced the same thing that you have, and you can share those experiences and know the support is there." The musical director, Major Lawrence Sale, is also regional director of music for the southern region of army bands in the UK, and said the choir is an opportunity for women to feel part of the work their partners do. He said, "It makes that link between the people that support us at home and those of us here in the military. It's nice to do something that bridges that gap, and for me, it's an honour, really." Military Wives Choirs Foundation is a network of choirs that reaches the whole military community to bring women closer together through singing. It's a registered subsidiary charity of the SSAFA Forces Help and helps provide guidance, funding and support for individual choirs, as well as the opportunity to bring choirs together through national projects. You don't have to talk about your experiences if you don't want to. It's just about knowing that somebody cares, Mrs. Devereaux added.
Pair cultivating interest in TV challenge. They have been gardening together for decades. Green-fingered Eleanor Waterhouse and Kate Bennett from Winchester met more than 30 years ago when they were both pregnant with their first children. Over the years, their friendship blossomed, and they can often be found planting and harvesting fruit and vegetables in Kate's garden in Morstead. But now the best friends are putting their gardening skill to the test on national television. The two 63-year-olds are going head-to-head with 16 other gardeners on the new BBC Two show, The Big Allotment Challenge, hosted by Fern Britton, which started on Tuesday. Eleanor, a retired university lecturer, and Kate, who recently retired as a teacher at Shakespeare Infant School East Lee, faces challenges including growing vegetables and making jams and chutneys from their produce. Eleanor, a grandmother of one from Elm Road, Full Flood, said, "I'm really looking forward to watching Jonathan Mosley, the flower chap, showing us how we should have arranged the flower arrangement challenge." Each week, judges will decide who leaves based on their performances. Kate and Eleanor survived the first week, and there is a colour photograph showing of the very smiling and happy-looking Kate and Eleanor surrounded by their efforts of growing flowers and what looks like some broad beans in the background and runner beans, and below them is the figure of Fern Britton standing at the gate with a sign saying "The Allotment," and all of them look as though they are thoroughly enjoying themselves. Something, I think.
River Cottage Lodge's planning application. Restaurant owners well known for their approach to sustainable produce have submitted a planning application to Winchester City Council. Hugh Fernley Whittingstall's River Cottage is due to open in June, and works are currently being undertaken to refurbish the site at Abbey Mill in the city centre. The application seeks permission for external lighting to be installed and an outdoor menu board to be on display. There will also be a wood burner flue and a new structural opening at the former watermill on Colebrook Street.
Poetry Fest to mark World War One. A new poetry festival commemorating the First World War and its poets is to be launched in Winchester. In its first ever year, Winchester Poetry Festival aims to celebrate the written word of a bygone age, decorating the fallen soldiers of World War One and the poems written about them. The festival will be launched with a weekend packed with workshops, readings, and seminars presented by both local and national contemporary poets. Seven writers from Winchester, including David Constantine, Patience Agbabi, Brian Patton and Zena Edwards, will share their works, and students from Peter Simmons and other Hampshire sixth form colleges will have the opportunity to participate in an inter-college poetry slam performance. The programme also features a guided walk round Winchester exploring locations of poetic significance, plus a poetry competition with the winner to be announced at the final reading, led by internationally renowned poet Jackie Kay. Stephen Boyce, co-artistic director of the festival, said, "Our aim has been to bring together poets and work that reflect the range and diversity of the contemporary poetry scene today, while acknowledging the legacy enjoyed in this country through this long history of poetry in all its forms. The festival takes place between September the 12th to the 14th and will have a number of events during the months leading up to the main festival, including Little Machine presenting Epic, A Mad Rush Through the History of Poetry, on May the 14th at Winchester Discovery Centre. Tickets for all the events will be available via Winchester Discovery Centre box office from April the 21st. Call 01962 873603, that's 01962 873603, for more details.
The Reverend Reg marks 50 years in priesthood. A Winchester cleric has celebrated 50 years in the priesthood with parishioners at St. Cross. A special service was held for the Reverend Reg Sweet, Master of St. Cross, attended by the former Master, Michael Harley, now the Archdeacon of Winchester, and Canon Andy Hofbauer of Wakefield Cathedral. The Reverend Sweet was also joined by officials from his formative naval years, including Vice Admiral Sir Charles Montgomery, 2nd Sea Lord, and Commodore Bill Walworth, RFA, as well as the brothers and trustees of the hospital. This was followed by a reception in the 500-year-old Brethren's Hall. Former church warden John Casson said, "How privileged we were when, in 1999, Reg was invited to come to St. Cross. His experience enabled him to start sermons with memorable lines such as, 'I've only been held under close arrest once in my life,' and to test our knowledge of the 24-hour clock and naval terms such as dog watches. He can also provide wedding blessings in Russian and is an expert bingo caller. So far, though, he has not indulged us with his taste in sea shanties." Reg Sweet previously worked as the chaplain in the Royal Navy for nearly 25 years before becoming the senior chaplain to the Missions to Seamen. He also serves the Honourable Company of Master Mariners, the Anchorites, the Royal Fleet Auxiliary Association, and as chairman of the Mission to Seafarers in Winchester. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of the event showing him, Reg, with his wife Margaret and his daughter Lynette, both clerical ladies, Archdeacon Michael Harley and the Canon Hofbauer, and the Right Reverend John Baker, former Bishop of Salisbury. And they're all looking very happy in that wonderful 500-year-old Brethren's Hall.
Air ambulance to carry blood supplies. They are the high-flying emergency vehicles that deal with the most serious of incidents. Now, the life-saving efforts of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, that's sometimes referred to as HIOWAA, will be boosted because it can carry blood supplies on board all flights. The air ambulances are now able to store blood in the helicopter at the required temperature by using technology first used by the British military in Afghanistan. The most common causes of death for seriously injured patients before reaching hospital are problems with getting oxygen into the lungs or significant blood loss. Air ambulance paramedics were previously unable to replace blood lost from wounds or internal bleeding before reaching hospital. The blood on board will be type O negative, also known as the universal donor, as it's safe to give to any patient. It will be packed into a cool box and electronically scanned to record patient details. A unique patient wristband will then be printed from the box to ensure the hospital team knows blood has been given. The blood will be transferred from Southampton General Hospital to the HIOWAA's airbase in Thruxton every 48 hours. Dr. Liz Shrewey, a major trauma anaesthetist at Southampton General Hospital, said, "Having blood on board takes us a step further towards bringing the hospital to the patient in the first crucial minutes after serious injury."
Well, now we have a question and answer session for My Winchester, and they're interviewing Michelle Price, who's manager of Winchester Church's night shelter, and she shares some of her favourite things about Winchester. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? Bangkok Brasserie. The Thai food there is excellent, and the staff are very friendly and helpful. What's your favourite pub or bar? The Wickham Arms, for its great atmosphere. What's your favourite shop? The Discovery Centre shop, for the range of unusual and creative items on offer. Favourite view? Well, the view from between the classical columns at the back of the Abbey Gardens, looking down the stream towards King Alfred. And your favourite building? Well, the cathedral, with its truly breathtaking architectural landmark. What or who is Winchester's biggest icon? Well, it's a bit obvious. It just has to be King Alfred. What is Winchester's best kept secret? The Great Hall, and in particular the secret garden there, Queen Eleanor's garden. What's the best thing about Winchester? The community spirit, willingness to help, and generosity of the local people here, which I see every day in my job working with the city's homeless. And the worst? The bus station. And also the lack of affordable, available housing. It would be great to see more landlords offering us cheaper accommodation. If you could change one thing about Winchester, what would it be? The one-way system, without a doubt. Describe Winchester in a sentence. It has something for everyone. Peace and serenity in its green and riverside spaces, and a bustling, vibrant atmosphere in the centre of town.
Main's work restarts after floods. Controversial roadworks in Coldon Common have restarted after weeks of delay caused by floods. Southern Water's mains replacement scheme in Main Road involves a temporary road closure between Church Lane and Scots Close. As reported, weeks of work to lay new mains earlier this year saw tensions escalate to such an extent that contractors reportedly called in the police after being verbally abused by angry members of the public. Businesses at Fisher's Pond reported a rapid decline in trade, with some claiming to have lost up to 30% of their usual custom. But the works were put on hold during the winter storms to alleviate possible congestion from nearby roads closed by flooding. With work starting again, the closure will result in a 1.4-kilometre local diversion directing traffic along Church Lane, Brambridge and Highbridge Lane. Temporary traffic lights will be put in at the junction of Main Road and Portsmouth Road and will be manually controlled during weak times to minimise the disruption. Contractor Clancy Dockra will be working 7 days a week and work is expected to be completed by April the 21st.
Fans go back in time to welcome the Doctor. Winchester welcomed a Time Lord last Saturday when former cast and crew members from Doctor Who landed at the River Park Leisure Centre. The sixth incarnation of the Doctor, Colin Baker, joined ex-technicians and other crew members at an event to raise money for Starlight, a charity which provides entertainment to terminally ill children. A raffle was held for people to win an original mini TARDIS, a mini Dalek and figurines, and Doctor Who memorabilia. There were numerous other stands showcasing a whole host of props, toys and collectibles from the hit series, which has been running since the 60s, as well as life-size costumes of the aliens the Doctor encountered and some full-size Daleks. However, Doctor Who was not the only show to feature on the day. A DeLorean, known from the 80s classic Back to the Future, was also on show for admirers of the film. Organiser Chris Tarrant said, "We had about 800 people visit and we're hoping to raise as much money as we can." Colin Baker said, It's lovely to meet all the fans of the Doctor, and all these people have turned up to support a good charity. It's also a chance for me to meet old friends from the show. And there's a photograph here of actor Colin Baker, who played the sixth Doctor Who, with some young lads, Reese and Ethan and Tommy, at the River Park, and they're all leaning against one of those horrid but famous Daleks. And I have been trying not to do this, but I'm going to have to say, exterminate.
Yes. Thank you, John. Fundraisers dive in for some good causes. A charity event, which was delayed because of the winter floods, saw people from all over Winchester diving in to raise some cash. 16 teams took to the water for this year's Winchester Rotary Swimathon at Winchester College last Saturday. The event had been postponed in February after the Kingsgate Street venue's pump room was immersed in water. Leslie Luffridge, Swimathon Committee Chairwoman, said, "We have been doing this for about 5 to 6 years now, and it's to get people swimming for whatever charities they wish. Among the charities to benefit from this year will be the Wessex Centre and the Rainbow Centre in Fareham. Last year, more than 100 people turned out to raise about £10,000. Normally, we would have about 25 to 28 teams, but some people had to pull out this year because of the change of date," Leslie said. She said that she was still confident of getting close to last year's total and thanked Winchester College for its help in staging the event. The funds raised will be split half and half between the selected charities and Winchester Rotary Trust Fund. Steve Leach, Vice Chairman of Rotary, said, "The best time we've seen has been the team from Winchester, from Peter Simmons College. One teacher and five female students swam 445 lengths in 55 minutes. I think they were trying to show up the boys." And this is accompanied by a colour photograph of a whole collection of swimmers in the corner of the Winchester College pool, in their swimming costumes, all waving and smiling. And at the back, there is Leslie Luffridge, the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Councillor Ernie and Barbara Jeffs, and Patricia Abbott, all waving but not wearing swimming costumes. Oh, they are closed. Sorry about that.
Lighting the way to save money. Energy efficient street lighting is already reaping rewards by saving taxpayers' money. As part of central government's commitment to carbon savings and energy efficiency, councils are charged £16 for every tonne of carbon they emit, including heating, lighting, public buildings, and from this month, street lighting. Hampshire County Council is currently replacing more than 150,000 street lights as part of its target to reduce carbon emissions by 20% by 2015. Recently investing £1.4 million into an energy performance programme that will save a further £200,000 per year. The programme will also see 25 of the council's top energy-consuming buildings made more efficient and is expected to save £5 million over the next 25 years.
Mystery why young dad died in crash. Accidental death verdict after collision with tree. Mystery surrounds the circumstances why a young father from Winchester veered off a road and died after crashing his car into a tree. Family and friends of Danny Apicella, 24, who crashed his Mini into a tree near Colden Common on August the 23rd last year, were hoping for answers at an inquest in Winchester last Wednesday. But Graham Short, coroner for Central Hampshire, rejected the evidence from 21-year-old Lois Drayson, who was Mr. Apicella's girlfriend and only passenger in the car. Miss Drayson suffered life-threatening injuries and arrived at the hearing in a wheelchair. She claimed Mr. Apicella of Fleming Place, Colden Common, was overtaking a white van on Portsmouth Road when the driver opened its door, causing him to swerve and lose control of his old-style Mini. Mr. Short said, "I cannot accept that her recollection is accurate. I cannot explain why she believes that there was a white van. I do not find it is supported by any of the evidence." It emerged during the hearing that there was a restraining order between the couple, with the coroner describing their relationship as volatile. Hampshire Police's forensic collision investigators said they could find no evidence to support Miss Drayson's claim, but also said they were satisfied she had not caused Mr. Apicella to steer off the road. The court also heard that Miss Drayson gave a statement shortly after the smash in which she described the Mini as a death trap. However, investigators found no mechanical failure in the car that would have caused it to crash. Miss Drayson of Old Salisbury Lane, Rumsey, who wept before giving her evidence, said, "I knew he was going to overtake the van. I said no." Mr. Apicella died at the scene, while Miss Drayson was taken to hospital, Southampton General Hospital. The coroner recorded a verdict of accidental death.
Community honours prominent parishioners. Villagers near Winchester could be about to launch a new award inspired by the Mayor of Winchester's Community Awards. Coldon Common Parish Council met to discuss potential improvements to the Parishioner of the Year Award in an effort to partly recreate Councillor Ernie Jeff's initiative. The prize aims to recognise groups and individuals for their contribution to the community and who have demonstrated outstanding voluntary service, of which several members of the village were identified. Scout leader Kevin Holland, Coldon Common Community Care Trust volunteer Mo Alderman, Coldon Common Youth Club and Coldon Common School Association were among those who received awards from the Mayor. Parish Clerk Debbie Harding said, "Unless you're involved with the community, you don't know what goes on, so you wouldn't know who to vote for. We need to give it a really good go or leave it altogether." Parish Chairman Councillor Richard Izard said, "It's proving more difficult to get a Parishioner of the Year for someone who hasn't already won it." Councillor Josephine Anstey said, "It's a big village to do this efficiently. It's such a large population and different people have different ideas." Mr. Holland was awarded for his contribution as a scout leader, while Miss Alderman was nominated for her work as the Community Care Trust.
Frustration as vandals target pond. A Winchester conservation group is furious about continual vandalism at a pond. The Weak Pond Conservation Group, which has been in action for a number of years, has been tested to its limits over the last few weeks as vandals have dumped dustbins, trolleys and fencing into the water. Trevor Dixon, lead volunteer for the group, said, "The situation is that there have been a number of problems with the railings and the posts are unsecure. Hampshire Highways have it in their programme, but to avoid any further problems, they have put plastic boards up. This has attracted the attention of some revellers who have taken them off and thrown them into the pond, and we have to fish them out. I'm a little concerned that if people really attack the posts, then the posts might break. On one occasion, I fished them out after they were thrown in, and then the next morning, they were back in, along with two shopping trolleys, a Winchester bin, and all the rubbish, all of it in the pond. The council has not been able to put up a solid barrier as the posts are in need of repair. Until the posts are mended, Mr. Dixon said the situation will remain and the work of the Weak volunteers will continue to be in demand. I have lived here for 30 years plus and have been helping out at the pond for about 5 years," he added. "We'll just have to keep fishing out whatever they dump until it's sorted."
Town not concerned over airport expansion. Plans to expand a small airport in North Hampshire are unlikely to affect the people of Alresford, the town council said. As reported last week, TAG Farnborough Airport has launched a public consultation which could see its controlled airspace extended to a similar size to Gatwick, despite only operating an estimated 25,000 business and private aircraft per year. Opponents say residents living in the east of Winchester, Alsford and the Itchen Valley will be affected. But Alsford Town Council Chairman Lisa Griffiths said, "By the time the planes reach us, they will be at 7,000 feet, and I very much doubt they will cause us any disruption." The public consultation ends on May the 2nd.
Money rolls in after marathon effort. Runners from Hampshire were among more than 36,000 people to pound the streets of the capital at this year's London Marathon. Excuse me. For Twyford man Nick Chadwick of St Mary's Terrace, it was his first and has kicked off the marathon bug. The 44-year-old raised £1,500 for Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham after his mother, Jacqueline, received a life-saving live liver transplant from his brother Andrew there 3 years ago. He said, "I completed it in 5 hours and 30 minutes. The crowd was amazing, and towards the end, I think if it wasn't for them, I would have failed. I have registered for the Bournemouth Marathon on the back of it." Kingsworthy Football Club treasurer James Marshall also saw success after doubling his £1,000 target for DEBRA, a national charity that works on behalf of people with a genetic skin blistering condition, epidermolysis bullosa. I'm sure that's not right. The 42-year-old of Loveton Lane completed the Mammoth Challenge in 4 hours and 18 minutes. "I managed to survive. I am so very pleased. It's a terrific thing to do." Matthew Southey, 41, of Riverside Gardens, Romsey, weighed in at 20 stone before training for the marathon, and with Crohn's disease and asthma, was an unlikely candidate. "It was a lot harder than I thought it would be," he said. "I got to about 13 miles and then was on target for 5 hours, but then Lucozaid was handed out in carbohydrate gels. It turned out that Crohn's disease hates carbohydrate gels. It was the worst moment of my life. I was retching so hard that I was on my knees, but I managed to get back up and on my way." He has raised just under £4,000 for homelessness charity Trinity Winchester and completed the 26.2 miles in 6 hours and 30 minutes. He wasn't the only one that found it a challenge. Retired Perrin School geography teacher Michael Clark finished in 4 hours 58 minutes to raise funds to help a bridge in Ghana. "It was quite painful," he said. "I just about managed to get round. I have raised £1,200, but I'm hoping for £1,500 in the end." Born and raised Wintonian Keith Miller ran for Macmillan Cancer Support, raising £2,800 in total. He paid tribute to Rob Berry, who tragically died in hospital after the race. "He is and always will be the full and complete definition of a hero," he said. "As a fellow runner that day, I salute him, and it was an honour to be in the same race in which he made the ultimate sacrifice to do good for others."
A car park shut for geotechnical survey. A car park in Winchester Central was closed for 3 days earlier this week for a technical survey. The Chesil Street Surface Car Park was shut from Monday to Wednesday for a geotechnical survey by Tweedy Evans Consulting for Winchester City Council. The car park is controversially the preferred site for new homes for the elderly. Many local people are unhappy that dozens of parking spaces will be lost. Councillor Keith Wood, council leader, said, "We are in the middle of a consultation process to consider the target need for extra care housing in Winchester and whether the Chesil Street Surface Car Park might be a suitable site. This kind of geotechnical survey looks dramatic. with a drilling rig on site to make a test borehole, but it is routine for any site where development may take place. The report produced provides necessary technical information, but I would like to stress that no decision about extra care housing at Chessel Street has been taken at this stage. The council apologised for any inconvenience caused by the temporary closure.
Party in the Park fun at Marwell. Marwell Wildlife is giving people the chance to see some of the world's most exotic animals in the dark. The Winchester Zoo is set to host Party in the Park, where children and their parents can see their favourite animals at sunset, meet the keepers and enjoy a range of presentations and entertainment from special guests. There will be inflatable toys, a bouncy castle and a bungee run, as well as the zoo's own Rise of the Dinosaurs event, celebrating all prehistoric creatures. Events manager Becky Glenister said, "This will be the third year we have held this event, and this year will be bigger and better than ever before. To keep the party swinging, we have incredible performances and entertainment, from costumed stilt walkers to fire juggling, live music and comedy street theatre. The event takes place between June the 13th and July the 5th, from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Food outlets will be serving a range of meals around the zoo, and Wickham Wines will be offering samples of local wine to guests over the age of 18. Tickets cost £16 for adults, £12 for children, that's 3 to 16 years old, and those under 3 are free. Tickets are available in advance only.
Main road to be shut for 2 weeks. A main road in Oslebury will be closed as vital roadworks are carried out to improve communications in the village. Contractors for BT Openreach, CCN Communications, will be carrying out essential repairs on an underground duct in Wadden Lane. The road will be closed at the junction with White's Hill to Great Coney Park from April the 23rd for approximately 2 weeks. Access will still be available to homeowners, as well as access to the ship inn via a diverted route.
That seems an appropriate item to end, which seems to have been a roads-dominated issue of the Talking newspaper. Our thanks to our editors this week, who were Ken Clemenson and Irene Dowding. Thanks also to our various technical teams and to our readers, who are Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. And we wish you all a very happy and blessed Easter. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.